Radio Prague News. Prime Minister Paroubek and Finance Minister Sobotka are in disagreement over how to proceed with a controversial arbitration case. Police in Prague are searching for a man who is armed and dangerous and has fatally injured a TV technician. Ecologists have found an army dumping ground for expired medicine at a protected landscape area. Czech Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek and Finance Minister Bohumil Sobotka are in disagreement over how to proceed with a controversial arbitration case that could cost the state 40 billion crowns. A London court is currently handling a complaint against the Czech Republic filed by the Japanese investment bank Nomura, which claims that the Czech government failed to protect its investment when it ordered the enforced administration of the ailing IPB bank in which Nomura had shares and its subsequent sale to a rival Czech banking institution, CSOB, 5 years ago. Nomura is demanding 40 billion Czech crowns or $1.5 billion in compensation. From information received by the Czech intelligence services, Prime Minister Paroubek fears the state could lose the case and would like to try to come to an agreement with Nomura. Mr. Sobotka, however, believes that any such agreement would violate state guarantees promised to CSOB in 2000. Prague police are still searching for a young man who fired two shots at another man at Prague's Karlovo Náměstí Park early on Tuesday evening. The victim, a chief technician at the country's leading commercial station TV Nova, came to the aid of a woman who was being harassed by the assailant. The 32-year-old was rushed to hospital but died from his injuries that night. Witnesses say they called the police earlier when they saw the offender standing under a tree with a gun, but the police came too late. The government has approved a defense ministry proposal to give Egypt 550 tons of ammunition that is no longer being used by the Czech army. This saves the state 50 million Czech crowns, or a little over $2 million, the cost of its ecological disposal. Egypt asked for the ammunition in April and will cover all transport costs. Ecologists say they found a large number of expired medications buried close to a cave in Moravia. Laboratory tests, however, showed that the underground water, which serves as drinking water for a nearby town with 5,000 inhabitants, has not been contaminated. The dump contained baths, creams, and other medication that was used as military general treatment rooms years ago. This is the third such dumping ground found in the Moravský kras protected landscape area. All three are believed to have been there since the 1970s, when the area was used by the Czechoslovak army to serve as a secret nuclear bomb shelter in the Cold War years. And a quick look at the weather. The next few days should have overcast skies. Daytime temperatures are expected to fall gradually from 24 degrees Celsius to reach 18 this weekend. I'm Dita Asiedu, and that's the end of the news. You're tuned to the English service of Radio Prague. I'm Dita Asiedu. Up next, the Czech president in Israel. European Parliament member and former TV magnate Vladimir Zelensky hangs on to his immunity. Another new Czech movie reaches cinema screens. And photos of unusual Czech cottages. Václav Klaus spent 3 days in Israel this week, his first official visit country since becoming president. Mr. Klaus held talks with senior Israeli officials and visited the Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial. He also pleased his hosts by pledging Czech support in persuading the EU to adopt what he called a balanced approach to the Arab-Israeli conflict. Rob Cameron has been following Mr. Klaus's visit and joins me in the studio now. Now, Rob, the relationship between the Czech Republic and Israel is certainly very close, isn't it?
It is indeed, Dieter, and that's due to a combination of historical and political factors. The Czech lands had a vibrant Jewish community going back 1,000 years. In the 17th century, for example, around 20% of Prague was Jewish. The Czechs also are traditionally less anti-Semitic than their East European neighbours. Then came the Nazi occupation, of course, which saw almost 80,000 Czech Jews perish in the Holocaust. After the war, however, Czechoslovakia was instrumental in the creation of Israel, as I heard from Professor Bozhivoj Hnízdo from Charles University.
The existence of the state Israel maybe wouldn't happen or would happen in a very different way if there was no help from Czechoslovakia, from of that time already communist regime of Czechoslovakia, which helped in spring 1948 Israel very much. So
why did they help to such an extent? What led the Czechoslovak
communists? The political situation was very different in the Middle East. Israel was a new phenomenon, and actually formating Soviet bloc and actually Soviet Union haven't had a lot of official allies on international scene. You know that Czechoslovakia of that time was founding member of UN organization, so it was very good ally, and for Soviet Union and for Czechoslovakia it looked that maybe Israel will be the center point, the core area of the new influence of Soviet bloc in the Middle East.
But things soon changed. Stalin turned against Israel, and as a result, official anti-Semitism spread throughout the Soviet bloc. And Czechoslovakia was no exception, isn't it? But things are very different now, aren't they?
Very different indeed. As Professor Hnízdo told me, many Czechs are rather more sympathetic to Israel and the Israelis than their European neighbours.
We are not the only country which maybe got feeling that this relationship needs some balance, and of course it's not opinion only of the president, but I would say maybe the public of Czech Republic, that maybe some countries of EU got maybe more pro-Palestinian position in this complicated conflict. So I think that, of course, it's not possibility of Czech Republic to change this, but maybe to help to bring some new elements, to create new balance in it, and maybe a bit new approach to the relationship between EU countries and Israel.
Charles University Professor Bozhivoj Hnízdo on Czech-Israeli relations. Thanks very much for that, Rob. While Italy has Silvio Berlusconi, the Czech Republic has Vladimir Železný, TV magnate turned politician. Mr. Železný is the former general director of the popular commercial station TV Nova and currently a European Parliament member for the Independent Democrats, a party that he himself founded. Under investigation for tax evasion amounting to 6.8 million Czech crowns, which is some $280,000, Vladimir Železný faces being stripped of his parliamentary immunity. The Legal Affairs Committee of the European Parliament held a meeting on Wednesday to discuss whether to allow him to be released for prosecution by the Czech authorities. But the Austrian Social Democrat Maria Berger, who chairs the committee, said that they were not yet ready to come to a decision. I now have Czech radio correspondent Pavla Kvapilova on the line from Brussels. Now, Pavla, the European Parliament was requested to strip Mr. Železný of his immunity a year ago. Does it usually take so long for it to make a decision on such issues?
Well, this case is quite complicated. Let's go back maybe a little bit to the history first. As we know, the controversial former TV Nova director should have the parliamentary immunity lifted to face criminal charges for fraud. Maybe you remember that Mr. Železný brought into the country some valuable paintings and allegedly failed to pay the customs duty. When the first request arrived to the European Parliament, the legal experts in the parliament were saying that this case should be more or less simple, and their prediction was that it should be solved within 2 or 3 months, but we have no decision yet. I asked Maria Berger, the rapporteur, what is the reason for that. She says it is the fact that later two more requests to lift Mr. Železný's immunity arrived.
The problem is that actually there are three cases, so we finally combined the three cases, yeah? And then it took some time to formulate the answers, to get responses and so on. Then we had the summer break, so yeah, it took a little bit longer than originally foreseen.
Now Maria Berger says she has everything she needed, also the information she asked for at the Czech Ministry of Justice and in our Senate, so she is ready to make her recommendation on Mr. Železný.
But why did Mrs. Berger not put that recommendation forward yesterday at the committee's meeting? Are there any new developments?
Well, that is something we can hardly say. The rules are very strict. Practically everything is confidential. The meetings are being held behind the closed door. I spoke yesterday to Federico De Girolamo, the Legal Affairs Committee spokesperson, and he told me that according to these new rules, the dossier should be officially kept in secret until the vote in the plenary. What we know is what we are being told by the Czech members of the committee normally. That's how we have learned that Mrs. Berger has not made her recommendation yet, and that is also how we have learned that Mr. Železný probably will not have any other hearing in front of the committee to defend himself.
So how can we expect this case to continue? What are the next steps going to be?
Now there will be, in fact, two votes, as we can hear from Maria Berger.
The timetable is now that we'll vote on it on 5th or 6th of October in the committee, and then in the plenary end of October.
We should stress out the decision of the Legal Affairs Committee is very important. Normally, in majority of cases, the plenary follows the decision of the committee.
Now, judging from the atmosphere in the European Parliament, what decision do you think will it make in the end?
Well, it changes. There are, let's say, kind of waves. In the beginning, the atmosphere was like, yes, probably Mr. Železný will be deprived of his immunity. Then he had a hearing in the committee and he scared some of the European legislators by his description of the Czech reality. But now we can hear more often again, it seems probably he will lose his immunity. A strong argument is that there was the procedure for stripping Železný of immunity already in the Czech Senate, and the Senate decided to give Mr. Železný up for investigation.
And finally, I'm also curious to know how you expect Czech MEPs to vote.
Well, I talked to some of them yesterday. A lot of them are waiting for the recommendation of the committee, in fact, like, for example, ODS deputies. There are anyway also legislators who have already decided how to vote, and these are the socialists. For example, Richard Falber voted on this issue already in the Czech Senate in favor of lifting the immunity, and he has no plans to change his mind. And his colleague Libor Rouček will do the same.
Czech Radio correspondent Pavla Kvapilova reporting to us from Brussels. Thanks very much for that, Pavla. In case you've just tuned in, you're listening to Radio Prague. The latest film by Czech director and screenwriter Bohdan Slama, Štěstí, or something like Happiness, has just premiered in Prague to high critical acclaim. Slama's previous feature, The Wild Bees or Divoké včely, received a number of international awards, and according to reviewers, something like Happiness stands a similar chance. Pavla Horáková reports.
Bohdan Slama's latest movie is about three young people who grew up in the same rundown block of flats and are now coming of age.
O čem ten film je, no? Jako v podstatě je ten film o tom, jak se lidi proměňují, když dospívají. Ta Monika.
The film is about the way people change when they're growing up. The character of Monika becomes a woman and Tonik becomes a man. The transformation is caused by their problems, which they need to solve. They are learning about each other, about themselves, and they're finding out who they are.
Sami se snaží najít sami sebe, no.
The settings are shabby, the acting and pretentious, to some extent evoking the Czech New Wave of the 1960s. The heroes are common people living common lives, yet there is something very powerful about the film that the audiences can relate to emotionally. The main characters are played by three of the stars of the younger generation, Tatiana Vilhelmová, Pavel Liška and Anja Geislerová. Director and screenwriter Bohdan Slama says he wrote the script with the trio in mind. Anja Geislerová plays the character of Dasha.
Základ byla psychická nemoc, která byla poměrně jasně specifikovaná. The character suffers from a specific psychological disorder, so for the first time in my life I had to do research. I went to a mental hospital and watched people with this disorder, how they speak, how they behave. Sometimes my intonation in the film is precisely what I copied from those people.
Pavel Liška, who plays Toník, says he could easily identify with the character.
To já mám společného s Tondou, že mě vlastně teďka je 33 let a já si připadám.
I share a lot with Toník. I'm now 33 and I feel like 23 when it comes to responsibility or being sensible. But at the same time, there is something positive and nice about his immaturity, and at some point in the film he has to grow up because he has to take the responsibility.
A stane se z něj ten chlap, jo.
Something Like Happiness was shown at the Toronto International Film Festival earlier this week. Next week it will screen at the San Sebastian Film Festival in Spain and is already scheduled for screenings in New York, Athens and Iceland's capital of Reykjavik.
That report by Pavla Horáková. It's time now for our weekly panorama with Brian Kennedy.
The Czech obsession with getting away for the weekend to the family cottage in the countryside or cabin in the mountains began to take root in the 1920s and had reached a fever pitch in the final decades of communist rule. Escaping to one's own chata, a simple cottage, typically located near a forest or a river built from scratch by the family without professional help, was for many a vital reprieve, not just from cramped apartment life, but from collective society. Today, the Czechs boast the highest per capita ownership of weekend houses in Europe. Sculptor, painter, and award-winning photographer Veronika Zapletalova has spent 3 years traveling the country documenting chatas, what she calls the sculpture of people's dreams.
I'm a sculptor, painter. I'm not a photographer. So I spent several years working around and thinking how to actually catch the pictures. And then I decided to sculpt by camera, means take photo of houses as a sculptures.
Veronika Zapletalova's installation Chatarstvi is a collection of photographs of the 500 most interesting Czech cottages she has documented over the years. She sees chatas as artifacts. Each one says something about its owner and the time and probable circumstances under which the family lived. Unlike chalupas, old village farmhouses that also make extremely popular second homes here, chatas reveal the dreams of their owners, she says, for they were built only for happiness, for recreation.
The very beginning was asking of a club of Czech tourists for mapas they published, touristic mapas. I got 100 mapa of Czech Republic, and I make a point where chata was written. And every chata means chata colony. And there is 100 and 1,000 of them, which I couldn't photograph all because just not physically possible. And I spent 3 or 4 years walking, let's say 3 days weekly during the summer, because of the light during the summer and spring, actually systematically all around the Czech Republic, photographing those chatas.
Colonies of simple wooden chatas built to look like log cabins began to appear in Czechoslovakia as early as the 1920s, especially in areas popular with trampové, self-proclaimed Czech tramps with a romantic vision of the American Wild West.
The first Czech chatas were built on the beginning of in 20th century, and there are two main kinds. One of them were built under the influence of American Indians and cowboys, actually under the new films which came to cinemas from United States about American Indians and cowboys. So then all the Czech Marie and Marušky got Marys, and all the Czech Janové, Honzové became Johns and so on. I think we got much more sheriffs and cowboys than all the United States together.
According to the study, The Little Czech and the Great Czech Nation, National Identity and Post-Communist Social Transformation, by the social anthropologist Ladislav Holy, the trend of mass ownership of weekend dwellings only began to really take off from the 1950s on. The period of normalization, the hard-line rule that followed Alexander Dubček's doomed attempt to introduce socialism with a human face, saw tremendous growth. The numbers of chatas nearly trebled from 1968 to the collapse of communism in 89. The weekend migration of city dwellers from the new but cramped quarters of prefabricated socialist blocks of flats, known as panelaks, was a national phenomenon. It continues to this day.
They had to stay in the panel houses, which were ugly. They couldn't realize themselves in the world. During the communism, it was really Friday lunch. During the Friday lunch, everybody disappeared and everybody came back Sunday night. It has definitely something to do with the impossibility to travel.
In communist times, foreign travel permits were largely restricted for holidays to fellow socialist countries, and apart from the occasional summer on the Bulgarian coast, Czech families were obliged to relax close to home, helping give rise to the massive tradition of weekend living and do-it-yourself construction. According to one analysis made in the early 1980s, on average, Czechs were spending 100 to 120 days a year at their weekend houses, often in very close quarters.
The other page is under the influence of Czech socialist period, when people lose their contact with landscape somehow.
As we flip through her Katarstvi installation catalog, artist Veronika Zaplatalova pauses to explain what, in her mind, makes each of the 500 cottages, and by extension their owners, unique. In some cases, it's the materials. A number of them have been made from buses or houseboats, beer barrels and discarded chemical vats. Some garden houses, which are not, strictly speaking, chatas, but were included because of the ingenuity that went into building them, were made out of pickle jars.
And this is very interesting to this. The people don't live there, they plant their flowers and herbs, but the material they use are interesting, and the construction and the shapes are very interesting too. So I found them as a sculptures, really.
But it's not just the materials that make each chata unique, she says. They also reveal something about the amateur builder's sense of beauty and dreams.
All the houses, actually, I found as a sculpture of people's dreams. The places they built it, their function of those houses was only the happiness of the people. They have their flats in town. So those are places only for weekend, for spend their happiness. The very strange materials they combine, and I'm asking myself why they use those materials. Some of it is necessity. I mean, they have it or they could find it. And some of it is just the way how people think it should be beautiful. And I'm asking myself, why just that should be beautiful? Under which influence? Political, social, historical, psychical, psychiatric.
I don't find it beautiful, this one.
After a while, I find some special beauty in it. After knowing more and more, I found beautiful things which I wouldn't think about them before.
I should describe it. It couldn't be simpler. It's a box. We can only see one window. It almost looks as if you carved a section of a panelak out and dropped it in the middle of the countryside. What does this one, number 24, say about this person's dreams?
This one is, for me, a symbol of socialistic architecture. It's from close to Ostrava, which is industrial region. So somehow, for me, it was very interesting how people from very industrial places, where they put their summer houses and how they actually create them.
Today, an estimated 1 out of 7 Czechs owns a chata, chalupa, or other form of weekend house. Veronika Zaplatilova's installation, which is now touring Slovenia and has been shown in Prague, Argentina, Brazil, New York, and London, offers us a rare glimpse into their shared history.
That was Panorama with Brian Kennedy, bringing us to the end of today's program. We hope you enjoyed it and will send us your comments or questions to either 12099 Prague 2 in the Czech Republic or to english@radio.cz. You can also find almost everything we air on our website, www.radio.cz/English, in both text and sound, as well as lots of other interesting information on the Czech Republic. My name's Zita Asiadu. Bye-bye and take care.
Ochalupu dostane od tam.
Ochalupu, ochalupu dostane od tam.
Znam jednu nivku tam, a dukati, a dukati.
Znam jednu nivku tam, a dukati, a dukati.
Ochalupu, ochalupu dostane od tam.
Ochalupu, ochalupu dostane od tam.
Je kravy má a hezké telátko, v úzkách je dost a nějaké selátko, kus pole má a novou, novou almaru, kus pole má a novou, novou almaru.
Je kravy má a hezké telátko, v úzkách je dost a nějaké selátko,
kus pole má a novou, almaru, a novou, almaru, kus pole má a novou, novou, almaru. No to by bylo něco, něco, no to by bylo něco, něco, no to by bylo něco, no to by bylo něco, kus daru.
No to by bylo něco, 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 to by bylo něco, něco, to by bylo něco, něco, kus daru. Znám jednu dívku tam,
znám jednu dívku tam, znám jednu dívku tam, to by bylo něco, kus daru. Pověs mi, dám ti dobré rady, znám se ve všem všady.